Hello and welcome to episode 72 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grunislav, and with me, as always,
Ed
in person again.
Hello, I am in person. Hello, I'm Ben Chandler.
Hey, you want to try something?
Yes.
Knock knock.
Who's there?
Interrupting cow. Moo!
I actually paused to wait for moo. I'm bad at this joke.
Knock knock.
Who's there?
Interrupting pirate.
Interrupting.
Arr!
I have one. Knock knock.
Who's there?
Doctor.
Doctor who?
How did you know it was me? Actually, a man in Melbourne told us that joke.
Yeah, a man who was painting his fence.
And told you that your joke was not very good when you told him one.
He was an idiot.
He liked my joke, but my joke was vile.
I hope he listens.
And unrepeatable.
That's true. I hope he listens to this podcast and he knows how much I dislike his
criticism of your joke.
Yeah, considering my joke was light years ahead of his crap. Anyway. How are you, Ben Chandler?
I'm well.
Good. Yeah. I'm also well.
Yeah. Good.
It's been an interesting few weeks.
It has. We've done a lot of kilometers. We've seen a lot of things.
We have.
We've eaten
lots of bran.
Yeah, we've eaten lots of things.
We have eaten lots of things.
We've been on a lot of beaches.
We have walked on a lot of beaches. We've walked on a lot of roads.
We've lain on a lot of beaches.
We have lain on a lot of beaches. We've gotten a lot of sun.
We've gotten a lot of sea.
We've got a lot of surf.
We haven't surfed.
A lot of flies.
Yeah. You notice the flies. I don't really notice the flies. I'm used to them.
Yeah, I just...
I am the lord of the flies.
You are.
Mm.
Okay.
Isn't that Beelzebub?
Is it?
I think so.
I thought it was a pig's head.
I don't mean the story. Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe.
I might be wrong.
I don't know.
I'm sure some of our freakish listeners worship the Lord of the Flies, and they can inform us.
Don't call them freakish.
They listen to us.
They might send flies after us, and I don't want any.
Well, they already
flies.
Have, haven't they, really?
That's true, you're right. Mm. You're right. Anyway, last time we recorded a podcast, we were in Dudlakine, in your room.
We were.
On your bed with Montgomery White around.
He wasn't with us.
No, well, he had been.
You can't trust him.
That's true. Anyway, now we are in Seabird, which is a... about 100 kilometers.
About an hour north of Perth.
Perth, so we're still in Western Australia. Yeah. I'm returning home tomorrow night, actually.
Tomorrow night, yeah.
So I don't know if this podcast will be up before or after I go home. But
well, you could do, there's the airport. You
that's
could do
true.
It at the airport.
I could use the airport Wi-Fi to upload.
Which is
it.
Slow.
Yeah, it'll take forever, but
might
whatever.
As well just do it when you get home.
Might as well. Anyway, as of this recording, I'm still in Western Australia on the tail end of 3 weeks traipsing around the outback and beyond with you.
Well, 2 weeks in the outback.
2 weeks in the outback, 1 week in the wild city of Melbourne.
It's not really the outback. We've been near civilization. Well, what I call civilization.
I
what
beg
you
to
probably
differ
don't,
there.
What you probably don't.
We've been to some pretty remote areas.
Yeah, but we've had sealed roads the whole way.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
I consider that fancy.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Unless you're on dirt roads, you're not really in the outback.
Okay.
In my opinion. And even then, that can be pretty fancy.
Well, I guess the usual question we ask at this point is kind of useless, but...
Why?
Because we haven't really been playing anything.
I mean, we have kickies. Swimmies.
I'm talking about actual, like, nerd computer games.
Oh.
We've been bad nerds. We've been, like...
We have. We've been
doing,
on the beach catching
yeah,
sun and
we
sea.
Have. We actually have tans now.
Mm.
Like, we're not pale and
well, I,
horrid
I
anymore.
Always have a bit of a tan.
Well, yeah, because you go outside.
Mm. Disgusting, I know. Don't tell our listeners.
Did we record the last podcast before or after we wrangled sheep?
I don't know.
I think we did it before.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think we did it the first night we were in Dudlakine. Mm.
I taught you how to wrangle sheep.
You taught me how to wrangle sheep.
Yeah,
it was interesting.
Yep.
It wasn't as horrifyingly difficult as I thought it was going to be.
Good.
So, now I know what you did for 6 years.
Well, you know a portion.
A portion of what you did for 6 years.
Hmm.
So, yeah. I had a little insight into the world of Ben Chandler.
And you taught me some Spanish interpreting, so really
That's true. We've exchanged skill sets.
Mm.
We could do one of those like
I could interpret Spanish but only for a very,
very
horrible set of circumstances.
Yeah, a very specific set of circumstances.
And a very yeah.
Yeah. But we could totally do one of those job exchange programs where except we don't do those jobs anymore because we're...
Job exchange now wouldn't really change that
much.
No,
it wouldn't change at all, actually.
Mm.
Yeah, so aside from that, have you... You were playing Quest for Glory 1 EGA a little bit, but you stopped.
I've been to the beach, mate.
So?
What do you want from me?
I played Discworld 2.
I know. I've been reading about art history, and that's pretty much all of my inside time at the moment.
That's true. I didn't actually play Discworld 2. I just played enough to get to 4X because
you're excited about Australiana.
Yeah, I wanted to have you hear the cut your own throat digibalabala talk in his stupid Australian pseudo Australian, which is really just Rob Brydon doing a bad Australian accent.
Which works.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah. But you've read about 4X in the Discworld books.
I have. I've read many of the four of the Discworld books.
Yes. I have not read any. I should probably get on that.
They're good.
Yeah.
I've been listening since the passing of Sir Terry Pratchett. I've been listening to some of them on audiobook on Audible while I work. Mm. But obviously, now that you're here while I've been working,
yeah,
I've been talking to you.
That's true. Sorry.
On account of that's been so you've actually ruined my life.
I'm sorry that I've distracted you from your introverted hermiting.
My memorial of a great man.
I'm sorry that you've had to go outside.
And I go outside.
Enjoy the breeze and the sea and
the
surf.
It's windy today.
It is windy today. You probably, listeners with headphones can probably hear the wind in the background.
Mm. We're actually, well, I mean, we're in a little place.
Yeah, but it's nice.
It's nice
looking out the window. I can see the ocean and the trees. And
we were going to stay in a motel in Perth or something.
We were.
And then my friend rang me up and said, Ben, stay at my...
Your cousin.
My cousin. And friend.
And friend.
Said, Ben...
You can be enemies with your cousins, I think.
Yes, you can. Yeah. And he said, don't be an idiot. Stay at my little beach house. Yeah. I said, that is very smart.
And kind. Thanks,
and kind.
Pete.
Thanks, Pete.
Yeah.
Good on you, mate. I know you don't listen to this podcast. He likes computer games, though. He played a lot of Game Boy Advance games.
Oh, okay. Well, that's something.
Mm. He likes Mario.
Oh, so well, who doesn't?
Me.
That's true.
I know at least one other listener of our podcast that thinks Mario is shit.
Really? Who?
Yeah. I'm not giving away our listeners' secrets just willy-nilly.
Oh, willy-nilly.
You need some bargaining power if you're going to get that sort of juicy goss out of me.
I have Coke for you.
I like Coke.
Tell me after the podcast.
Anyway.
Yes. Anyway. So yeah, I haven't really been playing. I mean, we've been doing some work. We've been working on our game, Shardlight.
But we've also been driving a lot. We've done about 5,000 kilometers.
We have. You know what's interesting is last time I was here, 2 years ago, we had just sort of come up with the germ of the idea for Shardlight. And we brainstormed a lot of notes
and we were...
Yeah.
We were going certain places with being inspired, and it worked.
If you go back and listen to the podcast from 2 years ago, where we got back and we talked about being inspired by your environment, we were talking about Shardlight, and we had been to Albany, and Albany had this creepy park and ravens and things, which
old ships and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, which very much inspired a lot of Shardlight and
atmosphere.
And it's really interesting to see how far it's developed. I plugged my laptop into the TV last night and
played a little bit,
and it looked interesting on a television.
And it's interesting because we were being inspired by the album that Stephen Wilson had just released.
That's right.
On this road trip, he just released the next album.
That's right.
And we've been listening to that a bit.
That's right.
Which is also a good album.
It is.
So
it's been interesting to see how things come along. Aside from that, it's been good. But I'm just trying to find a good segue. You know me in segues.
I know. But
we decided that this episode is going to be a little callback to our old podcasts and a specific segment of...
They're very old. We only did it for a very short period of time.
We did.
Even though the old fans clamor for them.
And I know Ponch is getting all excited
right now.
Hi, Ponch.
It's not Spaceman.
I'm sorry.
He's crying.
He is crying right now.
I've literally broken his heart.
I know you have.
I hate to see a man
do too, but you know what? Sorry, Punch. It's not Spaceman in Space. It is, however, Deliverance.
Well,
sort of. We're not going to do the hillbilly accent.
I couldn't keep up a hillbilly accent for that long. I don't think
I could either. Mm. Could you do your American accent again, though? Because I want to do my Australian.
I don't think I could. I don't.
Oh, I forgot to introduce the pod. I should have introduced the podcast with "G'day, mate. Welcome to the Blue Cap Tools Podcast." Oh, I'm fucking best.
You're Francisco Gonzalez.
That's terrible.
Thank you.
Not that mine was any good either.
The Blue Cup Tools podcast.
There's a whole rack of blue cups hanging over there.
How appropriate.
We should do like a picture holding blue cups.
We could do that.
On our heads.
What?
I don't know. Put them on our heads.
Why?
Because we're tools.
But no.
Shrimp on the body. No,
there's a toolbox here. I'll go and get us a
tool. Oh, look at that. We could take a perfect picture of...
We're ready.
We are ready.
Finish the podcast. Wrap it up.
It's only 10 minutes in.
Well, we've got things to do.
Clearly.
Our lives are filled with important potential.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to rant about things we don't like in adventure games and steps that people can take as developers and other casual hobbyists and whatnot to improve upon them.
The steps are all just don't do it.
Well, yeah, but it's more than just don't do it. It's how can you improve on it to make it better?
I know, but I was being immature for comedy.
Oh, really? Is that what you do? I see. Let's get this podcast started.
Beep, beep,
beep, beep.
I actually did the horn.
Yeah,
even though that's of no value.
But now you can do things, and now I see them, as opposed to before where
I'm looking at you right now.
Yeah, so am I. Are you gonna break eye contact first?
Yes, I am.
Oh, really?
Are we gonna have a staring contest?
Yes,
on the podcast. You just blinked.
Blinking doesn't count.
It's a staring contest.
You just blink too.
I know, but you blink first.
So?
This is the blinking worst podcast.
Blinking doesn't disqualify you from staring contest.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't. It's impossible not to blink.
Have you never done a staring contest?
You just looked away.
I
lost.
I know, but you blink like 5 times.
I don't care.
Anyway.
Anyway. what's something you don't like in adventure games that they do too much?
Torrent's Passage.
Okay, let's talk about Torrent's Passage. That was a game that you played recently and you hated.
Here's some shit that Torrent's Passage
does. Ooh, you got serious. Look at your face.
I am. That's what
I'm
happens.
Looking at your face. You were smiling. And you just went, whoa.
My face. Well, I'm
it dropped.
Passage.
It dropped. Passage.
Boring sausage. thanks, Jenny. Torrent's Passage does a bunch of shit, which is shit.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah.
First of all, there's the you have to click on one thing multiple times in order to solve a puzzle. You know, and in this case, it was a stupid fucking worm. That I'm sorry for swearing already so soon on the podcast.
Ah, fuck it.
Torrent's Passage, right?
Yeah.
It's this stupid little worm that anyone that's played it knows it, right?
And if you haven't played it, don't.
Right. So here's the thing.
Well, let me re-say that. If you haven't played it and you're over the age of 13, don't.
Right. And if you're not willing to use the hint button like me,
yeah,
don't.
Don't.
Here's the thing, is a game is all about feedback, and interactivity is all about feedback. So when you click on something, you expect a response. So if you're not given a response that suggests you need to click on this again, then you don't know to click on that again. It's like having a road with no signs on it. You don't know which way to go, you don't know which way to turn.
Well, that puzzle is doubly frustrating because not only do you not get any feedback that you have to click again, but the whole point of it is that when you hover your mouse over the worm, he kind of swishes out of the way.
He moves out of the way.
So you have to... It's double negative feedback because it's sort of saying, well...
There's something else here.
Yeah, there's something more to it. It was very frustrating for me watching you playing that while you were sharing your screen and I was watching you play. Because I knew the solution and I couldn't tell you because you didn't want to spoil yourself.
And the only way I solved it was just rage clicking on
you. Yeah, him. Yeah. So that's really... I mean, it's designed for children, but that seems
How did
like,
I figure that out?
Yeah,
did
I don't know.
Do children just sit there and click on things repeatedly?
Maybe.
Click, click, click,
I
click,
mean,
click,
they
click,
have
click,
to have, presumably, they beta tested this game, and they...
I think the presence of a hint button might have allowed people to get through that easier than I did.
I just wonder if there was a hint for that.
I don't know.
I wonder if the hint button was context-specific, like perhaps. If you clicked it on a certain room, it would give you a hint for the puzzle. Because, I mean, there's many puzzles at once. I don't know. But anyway, yeah.
Another thing that Torrent's Passage does is story-wise, you know, ostensibly Torrent is going on this big quest to all these different lands, but when you break it down objectively to the things that he actually does, he makes someone's dinner. He finds some tiles. he solves some logic puzzles.
Yes.
You know?
He has a two-minute romance.
Yeah, the things that Torin does are not very adventurous for a large part of the game. He's going through these amazing worlds, but the amazing worlds are full of the most menial tasks and characters, you know? So it doesn't feel like... It doesn't feel like the gameplay is representing the story.
Right.
Which I think is... it's very hard to design past that, in my opinion, you know? You know, you're on this huge, big, epic quest to save the world, but you have to make someone's dinner.
I know you didn't like the Bitternuts. You didn't like the King and Queen of Escarpa either.
Of course not.
But they're charming and funny. Charming and funny.
The air quotes are there. I could hear them. I could hear them in the air.
They have a Ken Williams guy playing the harpsichord in the back of their...
They're just... I don't know.
Isn't it hilarious?
Al Lowe's sense of humor doesn't match up with me, I guess.
Yeah.
I need to play King's Quest. King's Quest. Leisure Suit Larry 7.
See, you watched the intro of Freddy Farkas the other day when we were staying with Darth with Dan.
But a lot of that was written by Josh Mandel.
That's true, yes. But it is at its heart an Al Lowe game.
Mm.
I mean...
But that was cute.
Yeah, okay. I think you might enjoy Freddy Farkas. It's hard to say now because I don't know anymore.
Yeah, I've shattered your nostalgia for Torrent's Passage.
Yeah, no, I mean, you have shattered my nostalgia for Torrent's Passage, but my nostalgia for Freddy Farkas holds up.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of the puzzles in that game. There's a few kind of out there ones, but overall, I would say it's... The thing about Freddy Farkas is that if you play the disc version, it is very much a joke for every single interaction.
Well,
they removed a lot of that
Mandel.
In the CD. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth playing. It's worth your time to play.
Okay.
If you...
It's one of those Sierra games, like Torrent's Passage, that people don't talk about a great deal.
Yeah.
But I've only ever heard good things about it.
Yeah.
Like Torrent's Passage, until I was playing it, and then everyone went, wow, that's horrible. That's just incredibly bad.
I'm trying to think. I think I've heard of someone who doesn't like Freddy Farkas, but I can't remember off the top of my head who that is.
Mm.
Okay. Oh, well. Anyway.
I know, I've heard somebody say they didn't really care for it. I went, okay.
Okay.
Another thing that Torrent's Passage does is that stupid grass hill climbing.
Oh, yeah.
Nope, nope, no.
Yeah, that's an annoying one. I never liked that one.
I don't know why that's annoying, though.
Well, because the grass has this twee little annoying voice. And
probably.
Also
it's
because
the same voice
over and over and over again, yes.
And the hotspot's quite small.
Yes.
And there's really no indication where you're supposed to click except for that.
Yeah.
So you're just randomly waving your mouse cursor around. It's not really solving a puzzle.
No.
It's keep moving your mouse until you find the right spot.
Exactly.
Which isn't really a puzzle.
It's pixel hunting.
It is.
It's a giant pixel hunt.
But it's audio-related pixel hunting.
Yeah, which is rude to hard of hearing players.
Well, there's subtitles.
There are subtitles, which help the puzzle, but you shouldn't have to turn on the subtitles to help a puzzle, I don't think.
I always play with the subtitles on.
Yeah, well.
I don't know, I
never
absorb things better when I read them, I guess.
Really? I always find subtitles distracting. Like, when I watch a movie or something, if there's subtitles
sometimes,
in English.
If I watch a film, I don't put the subtitles on if it's in English. Unless I'm with my grandma, who's
right.
hard of hearing.
Right.
But... Yeah, so with a film, it's usually I'm only looking at subtitles if I don't have a choice.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, I don't know, I just get distracted and I read the subtitles even if I know what the language is.
Hmm.
Eh, it's just a thing.
Okay.
Yeah, does Torrent's Passage do anything else?
Yeah. Sucks.
I saw that one coming.
Yeah.
A mile away.
Torrent's Passage also has this thing that kind of... I don't really know that it annoyed me, but there's Boogle who can turn into all these different objects and stuff like that. And there's certain times where there were logical uses for items that I had in the form of Boogle that I was like, I should be able to do that, and I cannot do it.
Mm.
Like, you know, or at least give me a reason as why I can't do it. You know, it's like the whole... Richard Cobbett talks about it. You go up to a window and you try and throw a rock through the window or a hammer through the window or something like that, and the adventure game character goes, I can't do that. And you're like, yes, you can. It's glass. You can smash glass, you know?
Yeah.
So, lack of interaction feedback is always going to be a problem in an adventure game.
Absolutely.
Where interaction feedback is a very, very big part.
Yeah. I told you about Torin's dictatorship.
You did.
I don't know that I told the world.
You did not.
I had an idea in college for a sequel to Torrance Passage that I did along with this girl that I liked, who liked Torrance Passage, and mm-hmm. I played with her. And I mean, I played Torrance Passage with her. Yeah, she did have poor judgment. She liked she hung out with me. Anyway, it was basically that Torin had become the king of the rightful king of the world because the lands above are apparently the entire world, and so he had to go through all the worlds again, claiming them for himself and being the dictator. And Boogle had a love interest called Booble. Yeah, it was just a female version of Boogle, but with boobs.
That's clever.
And when you step on her...
How many?
I don't know, like six?
Because she's a cat.
Yeah, she's like a cat woman. Mm. And when you stepped on her...
Milk came out of her breast. That's horrid. That's horrible.
And we actually wrote this in an email to Al Lowe, and he responded.
He would have loved milk coming out of Boogle's breast.
My baby.
Of her teats.
Yeah. It was bad.
That would be right up his alley.
Probably. Old
pervert. Sorry, I like Al Lowe as a person. I genuinely think he's like this jolly old Santa character.
Yeah, probably.
But his games just do not make me laugh so far. And they do not make me have fun.
Yeah, well...
Every time I play them, I'm like, why am I playing this?
Yeah.
I genuinely like the guy. He seems like the nicest, you know... The nicest guy.
Man, that guy has a beard.
He does have... There's lots of people
Not Al Lowe, the guy in the truck that just drove past.
Lots of people have beards.
Yeah, but I've seen some pretty crazy beards out here.
You got to meet Len.
I did get to meet Len.
Len's one of my favorite people.
Len's a bogan.
He really is.
And he has a beard that's amazing.
And a beer belly.
And a beer belly and a blue tank top.
And I call him Dad, even though he's not actually my father.
Yeah. That's funny.
But he's the father of somebody I know. Therefore, that's pretty much my thing, because, you know you have that thing where you're like, oh, I can't remember that person's name?
Mm-hmm.
For me, if that happens and I know that they're somebody's father, you know, that I know, I just call them Dad or Mum. I've always done it.
Really?
Yeah.
But you remember Len's name.
Yeah, because I know, I've met him a lot. But the first time I met them, I didn't remember their name, so I went, oh, that's Mum and Dad.
Oh, okay.
Because there's someone I know who's Mum and Dad.
Doesn't that get kind of confusing?
Why?
I don't know.
How would it get confusing?
Because if you have a lot of moms and dads, then you...
You can have a lot of grandma and grandpas, and you can call them all grandma and grandpa.
I guess.
You can't really have a lot, you can have two.
That makes me think of, like, the old people who call each other mother and father. You know?
Yeah.
That's...
My grandma refers to herself as mother sometimes.
Really?
Oh, look what you've done now, mother.
When she talks to herself?
Yeah. She does.
That's cute. Your grandmother's cute.
She is.
She scoots around with her cat.
She really scoots around. She does scoot around. That cat runs in front of that walking frame real quick. That's pretty adorable.
I thought it was hilarious how she encouraged me to take a nap in her chair.
Mm. She encourages... That's her thing. Like, anyone that gets in the chair, she's like, put the legs up, go to sleep.
Yeah, it's like, no,
she just wants
visiting.
Everyone to sleep in her house.
I guess.
Maybe she's the Sandman.
Maybe.
Maybe she's got a sprinkle.
Anyway,
that's what she does. She fills you up with food, gets you all sleepy.
Yeah,
I nearly had a nap on her couch.
Yeah, she takes your things when you're not looking.
I doubt it.
She steals your belt buckles.
What's she gonna steal? My DOS games?
I don't know.
Those.
No, she just likes to poke people when they're asleep.
Probably,
and she gets a naughty thrill out of it.
Probably,
she goes.
I would like
your grandmother's not a witch. She's I don't mean not. To make her cackle like one.
No, she might be. I don't know. I've never seen her not stir. I've seen her stirring pots before, like on the stove. That could be a cauldron.
She makes some good meat pies, let me tell you.
Yeah, she does.
Anyway, we've gotten way off topic as usual. So something else that adventure games do. There's lots of things that adventure games do poorly, but one of the things that I don't like is when they have gameplay just stops in favor of puzzles, like, you know, sliding tile puzzles. Or a big perpetrator of this is a game called Still Life. Did you ever play Still Life?
No.
Well, Still Life is a dumb game for many reasons, but one of the many reasons is that it's an interesting story. You're playing as this FBI agent, Victoria McPherson.
I've read the synopsis.
Yes, as well as her grandfather in flashbacks in 1920s Prague, who is investigating a serial killer, as is she, and the serial killers are...
But she's not in Prague.
No, she's in Chicago, I think.
Right. That's what I thought.
Yeah. But she finds his journals, and she reads his journals, and as she reads his journals, she, you know, has a flashback, and you play as her grandfather, because the cases are related. So it's this sort of interesting, you know, duality of the cases. However, in Prague, there are several puzzles which involve, oh, I forgot the combination to my safe. Please work out this ridiculous system that I have put in place. There's one safe that's literally like wooden pegs that you have to arrange in a certain order that are really dumb.
For a safe?
Yes, for a safe.
That's not how safes work.
That's not how safes work, but it is in this.
Is the plural of safes saves, do you wonder?
Safes.
Saves.
Not saves, safes. Anyway, there's also the notorious cookie puzzle.
I've heard of the cookie puzzle.
In which, before you get home, because it's Christmas time, and your dad's like, hey, Victoria, I know you want to read more about your grandfather's case, but I'm really hungry. Could you make me some cookies? So this has no bearing on the plot whatsoever. And then you have to make him cookies. But not only do you have to make cookies, you have to decipher the recipe, because it's like your grandma's recipe, where instead of writing down, you know, 2 cups of flour and a pinch of salt and cinnamon and whatever, it's like a dash of love, a cup of expectation, a thing of this.
My grandma's recipes look nothing like that.
Yeah, and so it's coded. So you have to figure out what each of these words
grandma
mean.
Grandma was an idiot.
Yeah, and then, yeah, it's really, really dumb.
Yeah, so that's just padding.
It is absolutely padding, and it brings the suspense and the interest of the story screeching to a halt.
Yeah, you get this narrative and gameplay dichotomy where they're not serving each other anymore.
Absolutely true. And it's ridiculous, and I hate it!
Good.
I've gotten that out of my system.
I think there's another thing that happens, and it's not gameplay related, but it's storytelling related. A sort of dichotomy where you're going through this place, and, you know, you wanna, like, the designer, or the writer, or whoever's done it, wants to tell you what's happened, and so they have a character write journal notes for stuff.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Where you do not write in your journal when there's zombies coming to attack you.
You
fight the zombies off, and you can show that with environmental storytelling. You can show a guy with a thing in his hand, like a zombie pegged on it or something like that. You go, oh, the guy died, you know, trying to fight the zombies off. You don't need a diary entry to say zombies killed this guy.
Yeah.
You know? So instead
you're talking about other people's diary entries.
Yeah.
Yeah, like if you're walking around and you've... Yeah,
you've come across a diary and the person's
and there's
like,
a note.
I can hear them coming... That's not what you do.
You
get your thing, you like try and board up the windows. You do whatever you can. You don't write in your diary going, oh, only God can save me now.
Yeah.
Unless you're... I mean, you don't do that.
Yeah,
when
you're frightened, you don't
write it down.
Yeah, I thought you meant like adventure game characters. Like it happens in Dreamfall chapters where the character themselves keep a journal. April in The Longest Journey kept a journal, which kind of fleshed out her thoughts on events and things like that. Which was well done because, you know, you figure she's carrying around her art book.
Yeah.
Maybe in the lull between walking from point A to point B.
While you're thinking about how to solve a puzzle.
Yeah, she sits down and writes in her journal or whatever. But yeah, I know what you mean.
I'm used to role-playing games where they always keep a journal, mostly because you've always got 17 side quests.
Updated my journal.
Exactly. You've always got all these things to do. And especially in games like Torment, if you don't go back to that journal, you are lost. You've got so much stuff going on. So I can put up with that. I can bear that.
Actually, speaking of environmental storytelling and notes, one game that actually did that rather well was The Last of Us. Because, of course, it bowed to the tropes of having notes everywhere. Not everywhere. There weren't that many. There were a few. But there was also environmental storytelling. There was one scene in particular, which I don't want to spoil too much because you're going to play it, but there's an area that you go through that sort of has this, you know, something has happened there, and you read a little bit about it through notes, but then you actually get to a place where you see it, and it really hits you, and it's pretty disturbing, and also, but it's well done.
I just think instead of having notes, I mean, newspaper clippings work well because they make sense.
Yeah. And also, since it's a Naughty Dog game, you have the main character making comments.
Of course.
So, of course, you know,
which
he's
is,
like, oh my god.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But, like, also, like, why can't you show a CCTV recording?
Hmm.
They're everywhere.
That's true.
Know? People have cell phone cameras. People have.
They do.
Why can't you have a thing with an unsent text message? Be like, you know, where are you? That
right.
Sort of, you know, that sort of stuff. That's storytelling. That's not sitting down and going, I think I am lost. I don't know what to do.
Mm.
I am in the complete darkness, yet I'm writing in my journal, which I can see, even though it's dark. You know, that's like, I think there's so much potential to do stuff, and we've gotten to this lazy system of pinning notes to the wall, and going, read this.
Yeah.
Let the players are smart.
Mm.
Let them figure out what's happened, you know. There were lots of little things that I liked in Arkham City where you go into, like, someone's office and you can look at the stuff on the walls.
Yeah, sure.
And you, like, read into them and be like, oh, okay.
Mm.
You know, I like that a lot. So, do that, please.
Yeah, and don't put in sliding tile puzzles or safes.
The only place I think sliding tile puzzles make sense, right?
I'm anxious to hear this because I don't think they have a place anywhere except a Highlights magazine game.
Okay, if you need to keep a dangerous crocodile in the sky, right? Hear me out.
Oh, God, here we go again.
Embarrassed crocodile, right, in the sewer.
Yes.
Sewers don't have a locking mechanism.
No, they don't. Right?
Maybe you could put a sliding tile puzzle on the surface of the sewer grate, and people will look at it and go, oh, fuck, it's a sliding tile puzzle. I hate these. And even though it's a ridiculous way of locking a thing because anyone could unslide it, right? Nobody's going to because we're all fucking sick of them. Charles Cecil, you embarrassed crocodile.
I should point out for the listeners, you and I went to dinner the other night.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lovely... It was a lovely restaurant. Mm. It was probably the fanciest restaurant we've been to this entire trip.
Fettuccine.
They did very nice fettuccine. We were sitting at a nice table with a nice fettuccine, music with the stereo speaker right over us.
It was Enya, though.
It was Enya.
Enya and what else was there?
I don't even... Fleetwood Mac.
There was two Fleetwood Mac songs. After you mistakenly referred to another song, go, oh, they're playing Fleetwood Mac. Oh, no, wait, this isn't Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Later on in the night, two Fleetwood Mac songs.
Yeah.
Rasputin Gonzalez.
Listen, I'm not a mad monk. Anyway, we were sitting at dinner.
Mm.
It was a lovely time.
Mm.
And you went on a rant about Charles Cecil for a good 15 minutes.
He walked into the restaurant.
Yeah, after you talked about him so much.
I'm also Rasputin.
Yes, you are. Wait, are you saying Rasputin as in, like, Psychonauts, or Rasputin as in Rasputin the Russian?
The Russian, the guy that predicted the future.
He didn't predict the future.
Well, he tried.
Everyone tries.
He pretended to.
If everyone pretends to.
Yeah, but we did it.
No, we didn't. It was coincidence.
Not two. One Fleetwood Mac song coincidence. Two, no. That's prescience.
I think you might be putting a little bit too much stock in my abilities and faith in my abilities.
I believe in you.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Rez.
Let me just put on my goggles.
Well, I had a lot to say about Charles Cecil to get off my chest.
Yeah, well, as though you didn't last podcast.
It was interesting and amusing, and you enjoyed it.
Yeah, so did you.
Absolutely.
Anyway. That was a thing that happened. So, adventure game things that we hate.
Poor hotspot indication, obviously. But that's a normal one. Everyone talks about that shit.
Yeah, I guess. It took me a while, I remember, for the Ben Jordan games to do a hotspot GUI. And now I can't think of not having one in a game.
Whenever I play the old Sierra games, they don't have the hotspot.
Yeah.
And I'm always sure that I've missed something, you know? And I'm sure I have.
Yeah.
You know, so,
and the thing with those is that I think they had to sort of in their art indicate what was important versus not, so as to avoid pixel hunting. I know that they did that in Gabriel Knight, which is why you hate the SVGA version, because the sprites are mixed resolution.
I don't just hate it, I just wonder why anybody would play it like that, and I wonder why anybody would release a game that looks like that.
Mm.
I showed you again the other day, and you went, oh my god, this looks terrible. And the worst thing is, if you purchase Gabriel Knight from good old games.
Yeah.
That is the version that runs. I had to go into the settings when I first played it because I was like, don't tell me this is how Gabe. This is the game that everyone's talking about. Are you kidding me? So I went and looked at screenshots. I'm like, oh no, there's a VGA version.
Mm.
So I went and set it to the VGA version. And went, right, this looks normal now.
I like the portraits in the SVGA version better. But there's so little mixed resolution objects that you get away. I feel they get
away. The whole interface is a different resolution.
Oh, that's true.
It looks shit.
Well,
it does.
Sorry.
It does. It looks terrible.
Yeah. I still like it.
Well, I don't mind it. I don't mind portraits being mixed resolution, I guess. I guess I can deal with that.
Mm.
But when you've got one object...
Yeah, I know. When it looks like the old cartoons that you can tell which door is going to open. Yeah,
the only person who gets away with mixed resolution fully, other than like the guys that use Game Maker and, you know, get away with it all the time, but the guy that gets away with it all the... Like, in my opinion, is Richard Hoffmeyer.
Oh, yeah.
Because you don't even notice it when he does it.
That's true.
He's a master.
He is.
Hmm.
Those are some interesting games he makes.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm using your suitcase as a footrest.
That's fine. Just get your stinky feet off of my clean socks
last night.
Oh, well, then never
mind. I washed your clothes last night. They're clean because of me. That's
true. You're right. You're right. Sorry.
That's all
right. Stinky man.
Another thing that I don't like it when adventure games do is when... This happens a lot. Is when you've got a character... And I guess all games do this. And you talk to them, they're like... They're given a character that, like, this is the character that I am. I guess stereotypes and things. It's so common.
Yeah.
And you're like, are we really this immature that we write people like this?
Oh, there's plenty of games I could think of that do terrible, terrible stereotypes and caricatures.
Is it Tyrone's Passage?
Well, there are a lot of stereotypes and caricatures in that game, now you mention it.
Yes, there are.
Hmm.
This is the anti-Tyrone's Passage podcast. I'm sorry. Like I said, I genuinely think Allo is a cool guy.
Yeah. Well.
It's weird for me to critique adventure games because I genuinely like a lot of the things people dislike.
Mm.
Like mazes. I don't mind mazes. Or I don't mind backtracking. I don't mind walking all over a place looking for stuff. That, for me, is part of the adventure. Mm. So it's hard for me to go, oh yeah, this is psych. Because if I designed a game, I would not put a maze in it unless I was making a role-playing game. Like a dungeon crawler, basically.
Right.
I would not put a maze in an adventure game, but that doesn't mean I don't enjoy playing one.
I've put mazes in my adventure games, I haven't made them stupid. At least I hope I haven't made them stupid.
I think the problem is sometimes people get to a maze, and it doesn't matter if you've designed it well. It's like a side.
They're just like, oh, you can design it well.
You know well, the tropes.
Here's the thing. I think that in order to design a maze well... When the player gets to it, they don't realize it's a maze.
But I've realized it's a maze in your games.
Yeah, but...
I mean, look at the end of Ben Jordan in the catacombs.
Yeah, well, that's... Of course.
That's pretty mazy.
Yeah,
but... I think, like, one thing is, when you see a maze, when you see a cookie puzzle like that, when you see a sliding tile puzzle...
There are no other cookie puzzles aside from that one.
It's like... But it's a puzzle of that nature.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
It's like in The Wizard of Oz when the curtain's pulled back and you see the guy pulling the strings and operating the buttons.
Right.
You can see the designer going, okay, I need to slow the player down here.
Right.
That's what... Like, you see it as a player. You go, all right, well, they wanted me to, you know, take some time to solve some puzzle here rather than continuing the adventure.
Mm.
And that is immersion-breaking for me.
Oh, yeah, it's immersion-breaking for me as well.
Mm.
Which is why there's the whole challenge of seamlessly integrating your puzzles into your narrative and your gameplay.
Hmm.
Which is an entire challenge in and of itself, but...
Yes.
Do it, kids.
Yes. Also, another thing that kind of gets me with adventure games is... I don't know, it's hard to explain, but sometimes I feel overwhelmed. I've got too many items, there's too many locations. Discworld does that
too. Oh, yeah, sure.
You've got so many items and so many places to go and so many people to talk to. Do you know an interesting thing that I noticed whenever I've gotten people to test my games?
What?
Is if you put a player in a room full of characters and items and stuff like that, they'll try and pick up all the items before they talk to the character.
Really?
They hate talking to people.
Really? I've never experimented with that.
Yeah, I've watched people like over Skype play stuff, and I'm like, talk to the character, that's the important bit in my mind without saying anything, and they go and try and pick up everything first.
Hmm. Interesting. The thing I think is that people are so used to adventure game dialogue being so incredibly long-winded and dumb. Well, not dumb, but just overly done, that I think people are afraid to talk to characters nowadays, which is a shame, but I don't know. I think, too, also, it depends. Like, because I was playing Discworld 2, as I said the other day, and I remember the interface, the same interface for dialogue as Discworld 1, where you have icons.
Like Sam and Max.
Yeah, but some of the icons are just completely dumb and for jokes and stuff. Like, there's a think bubble where Rincewind just kind of tells you what he thinks about the character. And some of the dialogue in Discworld is really long.
Well,
and
that's how Terry Pratchett writes.
Yeah, I know, but it's just like, you kind of want to avoid it and get on with the game, you know?
I think also dialogue is a different mindset to exploration.
Yeah.
So when you're in that exploration mindset, you walk into a thing, you want to explore the thing. Oh, what cool stuff can I pick up?
Yeah.
You know, what door can I open? Where can I go from here? I'll come back later and talk to this person once I'm ready to talk to someone. I'm not currently ready to talk to someone.
Yeah.
Although, in saying that, when I was a kid and I was playing Monkey Island, I just wanted to talk to everyone and see all the funny stuff they had to say. Same with Sam and Max.
That's true.
But then I also wanted to click on stuff and see the funny reaction, like, interaction between Sam and Max.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Yeah, sure. I used to like just randomly talking to Max and like getting a new response every time you click.
That was me.
Getting a new response every time that you click on the non sequitur button.
Yeah.
And you get a new, and there's be like, oh, I hadn't heard that before.
There's all sorts of cool hidden stuff.
Yeah. LucasArts games were good for that replay value of finding little hidden jokes and
things like
that. I
laugh at them now. Like, I go through a play now, I'm like, I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, same. But as far as feeling overwhelmed, I remember there was a game that came out several years ago. The Eye of Gelts.
Oh, the Eye of Gelts is watching us.
Yeah, that was
a second face.
A second face, yes.
By Le Voltaire?
Yeah, Le Voltaire. Which was a great game. It was very interesting. But I remember I couldn't get into it because I felt really overwhelmed. Like, they explain in the intro all this amazing lore and all this big grandiose plot. And then they kind of throw you into the game without a clear indication of what you really need to do. But this entire kingdom at your disposal to walk around and explore and talk to characters and things like that. And it just feels like, especially at the beginning of the game, of a game, if you don't have a set goal in mind and you're just free to explore and wander around, it's really easy to lose focus and just feel overwhelmed.
You get
and
kind of paralyzed by too many options.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I've always liked role-playing games like Fallout or, sorry.
That's all right.
We can play footsies if you like. That's, you know, role playing it where you have all the side quests, but you also have, you always have the main quest.
This is the main goal,
right? Yeah. So you always have that indicator in mind, so that if you get sidetracked or whatever, you can always head back to the main thing, and it'll keep you going.
I think it depends a lot on the game. Like, I really like Quest for Glory a lot because there's no real, you know.
Well, the end goal of Quest for Glory is always save the land from whatever.
But I mean, like, you don't walk into the town, they're like, this is the thing you have to do.
Yeah,
you
know? That's true.
You walk into the town and you go to the thing, the guild, and you go, oh, this is all the cool stuff you can do, and you talk to people. So I really like exploring a town like that.
Yeah.
And when I play, like, Elder Scrolls style games, you know, you're in this giant big land, and you've got this epic quest to do, but I don't want to do that quest. I want to go and there's a cave over there, I want to see what's in there, there's a guy living in there that's going to hit me with his knife, I want to see why. You know, so I think it really depends on the form of the game.
Why I think it worked well in, like, for instance, the Blackwell series, where the introduction to those games were always like a self-contained case, and then the grander plot opened up as the game went along.
Yeah, you don't really want to start with like, the land is in strife, my lord. You must save it from the peril.
Right. You want to start off with like a little thing with a little self-contained area that's not too big and not too overwhelming and not too small either, obviously. But
I like, I was playing some Dragon Age Origins a little while ago, and that all starts, you can pick your race, gender, and sort of starting background like that. And depending on what you pick, you get a different starting story, and it's very personal to you. It explains how you go to become a hero, right? And I really like this. The one that I pick last time. I can't remember the first time that I tried playing it that I picked, but the one that I picked last time is like, you're a woman in an arranged marriage, and you're not happy about being in the arranged marriage, and you want to get out of it, and then all this thing happens, and like, you know, you're the guy who's meant to love you is like, oh, I'll save you, like, piss off, I don't want you to save me, I'll do it myself. And this is this really interesting... It was a really... I was gripped, man, by this story. It's huge for, like, 3 hours.
How do they present this to you?
You play it.
Oh.
It's a full thing that you play for every single starting origin. Oh, wow. It's huge.
That's
it's
a massive. Lot.
Yeah, and there's, like, an hour or two of gameplay. Like, it's Jesus. Big, right?
And this is before you even start the main game?
Yeah, that explains how you become a hero. You play this whole thing. It's not. It's like a normal gameplay. Nothing... It's
Well,
it's
I guess that kind of explains seamless. The origins subtitle.
It's a seamless thing. And as soon as I get into the main quest... Both times I've tried playing it, I'm like, oh, this is boring. I don't want to save the world. You know, I really like being able to, like, have a...
How long is this game?
Dude, it's an RPG. It's a big RPG. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an interesting idea, though. Like...
Yeah.
Hmm.
So that's for me. If you've got a personal story, the story should revolve around the main character, in my opinion. That's absolutely. Why they're the main character.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, Dragon Age Origins. Not oranges. I can't talk.
I like oranges.
I do like oranges.
I do too.
Why
haven't we had any oranges this trip?
We've had orange juice. We've had lots of bananas.
That's true. We have had lots of bananas.
Bananas are easier to eat on the road.
They are, yeah.
Oranges are messy.
That's true.
I like that really...
We haven't had any apples.
True. We've had apple juice.
Yeah, but that's not... You had an apple icy pull.
I did. Go and buy an apple. The store's just over there.
Nah, it's alright.
I like a quest that's not like the land needs you to save it.
Mm.
For me, a quest should more be about the people involved.
Yeah, sure. It's like that talk I gave at Indiecade about games where saving the world is boring. It's more interesting to deal with your own personal demons.
Or someone else's personal demons. A more immediate effect that you can. Like a tangible thing.
Yeah, exactly. Because saving the world is boring.
Well, we've all done it a million times.
Yeah, so it's like, well, the world's in trouble again.
That's what I used to call it when I was playing video games. People are like, what are you up to today? I'm like, oh, I'm saving the world again.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing this weekend? Oh, I think I might save the world. Even if I was playing like Grand Theft Auto, where I really wasn't saving the world, I was causing mayhem.
You were making a name for yourself as a career criminal and making money.
Mm. Well, no, I was just running people over.
Oh, okay. Well, that too.
Driving faster.
You're a horrible person.
Around Miami.
While listening to Hall & Oates and Laura Branigan.
All sorts of wonderful music.
Yeah.
Mm.
We listened to a lot of that music.
We did listen to it while driving and singing along.
Yep.
It was good.
I brought my Vice City mixes.
Mm.
You can keep those, by the way.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Really? You've had them for a long time.
Yeah, but I have them all on my iTunes.
And you don't have a CD player anymore.
The only reason I brought them up to New York was because I was going to bring them along here.
Fair enough.
So, yeah. What else? Yeah. Adventure games do a lot of silly things.
Well, all games do a lot of silly things.
That's true, they do.
You know. Going back to the environmental storytelling thing, yeah. I remember, did you ever play a first-person shooter from 1998 called Unreal?
No.
No.
Is that the engine?
It is the engine. Mm. That's the game by Epic, which spawned... which was written in the Unreal Engine.
Right.
Which went on to be the engine for such games as Deus Ex.
Sure. Which now we're up to Unreal Engine 4 or something, and people are making adventure games in that.
Is it Unreal Engine 4?
I think so.
I think it is, yeah. Yep. I remember at the very start of that, you wake up... You know, first-person shooters weren't really a story-based thing, but that's the first time I remember playing a first-person shooter and being like, you wake up on this thing and you sort of sit up from the bed and you can go around and there's, like, diaries and journals and stuff like that. But there's a couple of moments, like, as you're going out of... You're trying to get out of the spaceship, which has crashed, you know. It's a prison ship, and you were a prisoner in the ship, and you don't really know anything about yourself other than that you're a prisoner.
Right.
You see, like, a person screaming for help and getting dragged underneath the door. All in, like, 1998, not many polygons sort of thing. But that, to me, was like... I was like, wow, that's crazy, you know? Like, it's obviously very scripted, and the levels in Unreal aren't great. Like, the design's not that great, it's not that interesting. But it did give you a world where, like, you know, there was lore and stuff like that to explore. And that, to me, was a really cool indicator to see this guy get dragged under this door while screaming for help. You know there's danger out there. You know, there's like, it really built it up. And there's this alien race called the Scar, which, like, the first you hear about them, and like the first time you see one, you're in like this tunnel that's lit with lights, and the lights go off one by one, and you're like, oh, something bad's gonna happen, and the music starts and the lights all come back on red, like emergency lights, and like that was the first time I'd ever seen a game do this. Is 1998, dude. This is like,
it was a long time ago.
You know, nearly 20 years.
Don't remind me.
And I was like playing this just going, wow, you know,
man, I was playing Grim Fandango in 1998.
And
very, very quickly, because I knew that I wasn't going to be allowed to play it, because I knew I was going to get a D in biology on my report card, which I told you about the other day.
You did, yeah. So that was...
And not because... I didn't get a D in biology because of Grim Fandango, by the way.
No, it's just because you didn't want to do the...
The busy work.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But yeah, so that was the first time a game... And looking back now, I can see that Unreal has a lot of problems, you know? But... It really kind of opened my eyes up to, like, man, games can do this cool stuff.
You know?
People call it cinematic storytelling. Having seen some films, I'm now reluctant to use the word cinematic, because I've never seen a game that does the stuff that cinema does. Cinema's very subtle if it's done well. Games are rarely subtle.
You should watch the Doom movie.
Should I?
I've never seen it, but I know that there's a bit...
But
where
I
they...
like Doom.
Yeah, Doom movie has The Rock in it.
I don't mind The Rock.
It also has a bit...
I can smell what he's cooking.
As far as I, what I hear, there's also a bit where it switches to first-person mode.
I don't see the point in that.
Yeah, it's fan service.
It's an action film. Yeah. I don't know what I'll get out of it.
Mm.
Here's the thing, action films don't interest me because I'm not doing it. Action games interest me because I'm doing it. That's great, that's fantastic. Bam. Shotgun.
How many times have you played Doom this trip?
Only a couple.
Only a couple? As in, like, two?
Probably.
Three?
I don't think so.
How long do you get? Does it take you to get through episode one?
25 minutes.
Doesn't that worry you?
No. It's not a hard episode.
No, I mean, I'm talking about the fact that you actually sit here and play Doom when there's so many other games you can play. I saw your game collection.
I have quite a few.
We recorded a podcast in your room, on your bed, while I was looking at your game collection.
Here's the thing. You walk into a bar.
You could topple over.
I could topple over.
I've had topple over. Yeah, you could have a game avalanche.
I've had that.
Yeah.
I've had game boxes landing on me. And there I'm like, oh, my precious game. Here's the thing, right. I like to sample the other games and stuff like that. But when you walk into a restaurant or a bar, you know, there's a ton of different things you can
not make. As many things on the menu in a bar, restaurant in a bar. Or a bar as you have games.
In a bar, you could make all these different mixes. No. You could.
I still think that you have more games than possible combinations of alcohol.
That's fair, but I've played a lot of those games.
Okay.
Right, you walk into a bar and you go, what do I feel like tonight? Do I want to try something new, or am I going to have the thing that tastes nice that I know tastes nice and I enjoy it every time I have it? You know, for you it might be a dark and stormy. You know, so you get your dark and stormy, you taste good, you enjoy it, you stand up having enjoyed your dark and stormy, you might just have one. Sometimes I might just play one episode of Doom, you know. You stand up and you go, that was good, I enjoyed that. I didn't need to try something that I've never had before. It wasn't a new experience, but it was well made. And for the extent of the duration,
you know,
I enjoyed it.
You know, normally when we record the podcast and you go on these bullshit rants...
This is genuinely...
No. Let me finish.
Okay. You got me very defensive then.
I did. See, normally when you do these things, it's fine because I can't see your face. But now that I can see your facial expressions and your cheeky little grin when you say these things, I just want to punch you.
Okay. Could people hear that? That shit, hold the microphone there. But yeah, no, but that's genuinely how I feel.
Yeah, okay.
Like, you know, when you go to a restaurant, you go, I could try the new
I get your metaphor.
I know that this is going to be good, so I'll get it.
Okay.
So yeah.
That's fine. That's
why I play Doom a lot.
You can play Doom.
It's the same with Another World. I play Another World.
But do you get enjoyment out of it, or does it just become routine?
No,
like, you're just going through the motions.
I genuinely enjoy it.
Okay. Fine.
I like the flavor of Doom.
Okay.
I genuinely do. It's the same with playing Full Throttle.
Yeah.
Full Throttle wasn't a hard game to start with.
Well, no, but Full Throttle, I wouldn't play Full Throttle every week.
No.
I play Full Throttle, like, once a year.
Sure,
same. I play most of my favorite adventure games once a year.
I play Full Throttle maybe twice a year, I think.
Yeah. I haven't played The Curse of Monkey Island in ages.
You like that
game. I love that game.
Hmm. But that's the thing. I'm not being challenged by it in the manner that I first was when I played it.
Right.
You know, although Doom, when you play it on Ultraviolence, I won't say it's hard for me, but, you know, there's...
You won't say it's what?
I won't say it's hard.
Hard! All right, Mike. Please stop making facial expressions.
But there's still a thing like, I've got to do this right. You know,
yeah.
I've got to... If I mess this timing up, I'm screwed. You know,
right.
So, you know... There's bits where I have to remind myself, like, go to the left here because the guys are going to be to the right. Go to the left, strafe to the left, turn around, shoot that way. You know, so I'm constantly engaged, and that's enjoyable for me.
Mm.
It's like playing Hotline. I've played through Hotline Miami four times. After two times,
what is it about? To go back to adventure games, what is it for you personally about certain games that make you want to go back and replay them, even though you know all the puzzles and you just are basically going through the motions? Like, I did it with Day of the Tentacle recently.
You did. I watched you play, and I was like, when your laptop died on the plane, I'm like, oh, you were so close.
Yeah. I start up Day of the Tentacle, and it's just bam, 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 bam. I don't talk to anyone in Day of the Tentacle, actually, because
I enjoy talking to people.
Yeah, but I know all the dialogue, and I remember all the jokes, and I remember all the dialogue. And so it's not like, say, Sam and Max, where I hadn't played it in a while, and I had forgotten some of it.
Mm-hmm.
But even still, like, I knew... Like, I actually... Sam and Max, when I played through it on the plane ride over, there were bits where I had to stop and think, okay, what do I do next? Whereas Day of the Tentacle, I just know.
Well, I was like that with The Secret of Monkey Island, with the Ghost Feather.
Yeah.
And also how to set the rope on fire, because it's been so long since I played it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, I've forgotten a puzzle in The Secret of Monkey Island. What the hell?
Yeah, that's worrying.
Yeah, that really is.
That's like, yeah.
But I mean, it didn't take me long to solve
it,
obviously, because I'd done it before, but I don't know why I replied. For some things, it's like, I don't know, it's like listening to your favorite album again.
Mm.
You know the bits, but there'll be stuff that you didn't notice the first time.
Yeah, to an extent, I
guess.
And
sometimes you just want to sing along.
Yeah, that's true.
And sometimes it's fun to see the same bit of dialogue that you really liked and acted out, the same animations.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I enjoy playing them.
Yeah.
Even just seeing locations, that's the only reason I play The Dig again, is to hear the music and see the art.
Yeah.
Like... Yeah,
I should play through The Dig again too. I have it on my laptop. I have so many games I still haven't played. I have a long journey in a few could tomorrow, so I'll just play them all as long as my laptop stays alive. But yeah, it's funny with Day of the Tentacle. Like, I have a routine for playing it too. Like,
you have a strategy.
I have a strategy. Like,
so that's me with Doom.
Yeah.
So I don't. Here's the thing. I was telling someone recently. I don't know the levels in Doom extensively.
Mm-hmm.
I know a path through the levels,
mm.
and every now and then. It's very rare that I do it. I'm like, I might just remember what the rest of the level is like. I'm like, oh, I forgot this bit was a thing.
Because
I play the same way every time.
Yeah, so
you
do I mostly.
You should talk to people in Day of the Tentacle and be like, oh, that's right, that's funny.
No, I mean, sometimes I talk to people because you have to. But like,
of course.
I don't do the optional conversations. Mm. Like, I talked to Dr. Fred about about his contract because I love the line when he's like, ah, when he's talking about how he has nightmares and stuff, and he's like, that's a lot of coffee, and he goes, I haven't slept in 2 years! I always laugh at that line.
Yeah.
But I, I don't know, I always, like, I have these really weird quirks when I play Day of the Tentacle, and I noticed this the last time I played, which is, when I flush items to the characters, I always walk them to the Chronogon and use item on the thing so that they'll physically walk over and go whoosh, instead of just like doing it from another room. Because
you can just do it easily.
Yeah, because I just feel
you
it,
like seeing the animation.
I like seeing the animation of them walking over and putting the item in and flushing
it's
it.
It's cute.
Yeah, it is. And the fact that it's in there is like, it's really cool. And like, I always do Hoagie I've solved most of Hoagie's puzzles first.
I noticed that. I'm like, I remember playing and it took you forever to get to a different bit. I'm like,
yeah,
man, you're only just at this bit. And then I realized that you'd solved all of, well, almost all of Hoagie's puzzles.
Yeah,
I
focus on each character first. Like, I solve most of Hoagie's puzzles, then I free Laverne, I solve most of her puzzles, then I do Bernard. I always leave Dr. Fred, the rescuing from the IRS for the end, because I like for him to get the diamond and plug it in and have Hoagie and Laverne ready to go. So, yeah.
I can understand
It's
that.
Very strange the
well,
way
I mean,
play
you're
it.
The director.
Yeah, exactly. So
and
I like
the
story.
That's how you like the story.
That's how I like the story to play out. Yeah,
that makes sense to me.
Yeah. Anyway.
No, but yeah, that really does... Like, I guess I have quirks when I play games.
Yeah.
You know, like when I play Doom, there's bits where I like, I want to save this gun for this bit. Mm. I could use this and this would be easier here, but I'm going to use this gun. You know?
Right.
I like using the shotgun most because it's the most enjoyable. Mm-hmm. So even though it might not kill the enemies the fastest in certain places, that's the weapon I enjoy using the most.
Mm.
So, you know, I stay with the, you know, the first weapon you pick up in the game because I, you know, I like using it.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, that might not be the best way to play the game, but that's how I enjoy playing it.
Sure. And that's really what gameplay is all about, enjoying
yourself.
Well,
that's the point of interactivity.
Yeah.
Is you doing it. You make the choices. Choose your own adventure. Doom is literally a choose your own adventure game.
But with guns.
Yeah.
If you want to use the BFG, turn to page 7. If you want to use the shotgun, turn to page 9.
I never used the BFG except for the final boss.
Oh. Well. There you go.
Don't know why.
No.
Maybe I'm a loser.
Well, this was a delightfully off-topic podcast, but I think we did a good... We talked about some interesting things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Considering we're, like, literally a 20-second walk from the beach.
Yeah.
I'm pretty impressed that we managed to do a podcast.
Well, I mean, it's cold. It was cool this morning.
The wind's
windy.
Died down.
Yeah, the wind's died down, and it looks like it's getting a little heated.
And
we've
had a lot of beach. We can't complain.
We have, yeah, exactly. So we can take a little time out for you, the listeners.
Hi.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
So, yes... this has been episode 72. I think it was 72.
I think so.
I hope it was 72.
It
doesn't matter. So yeah, if you want to follow us on Twitter, I am at Grundislav Games.
I am at Ben_304.
And together we are...
Me Underwears.
We are at BCT_podcast.
Yay!
Yay! Thanks, friend.
Have lots of fun adventures, everybody, and keep an eye out for embarrassed crocodiles.
Yes, and have fun with your friends. Like Ben and I, we're friends,
yay!
Right?
Yes, we
How
are.
Long are we going to be friends, Ben?
Forever!
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to my club, Park Avenue, Central Florida's hottest nightclub. We have a special treat for you today. We have a new house band with a new dimension in rock and roll. We have the one, the only, Dragon Sound!
Your sister Jane? She working here?
She's not supposed to be here. I don't know what she's doing here.
You better watch her. Let's go. Come on.